So hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Deep Dive. And this week, well, the newsroom has kind of been buzzing about one particular topic, budget, right?
Yes, budget gets us all excited. Yeah. This year is a bit interesting. It's SG60.
Mm.
Yeah, so we could expect some goodies perhaps.
We're hoping.
Yeah, we're hoping. And then of course, this is a confirmed election year.
That's right.
So that's another thing. And then it's the first budget for the newly minted Prime Minister, Lawrence Wong.
Yeah.
So Steve, this looks like a blockbuster budget.
We're going to mark this in the calendar, folks. February 18, CNA will bring you live coverage of the budget. And of course, here on Deep Dive, we'll also follow up with an analysis of what that budget has announced.
That's right. So stay tuned to all our coverage. There have been some hints as to what will be covered. Families are on top of this list.
Okay.
Bigger families. Businesses for sure, because that's always a perennial problem. And then the biggest thing ever.
Oh, which one is that?
Cost of living.
Ah, yeah. It's becoming quite expensive. I feel it whenever I eat out. I'm just going to stay home and eat.
Not even me going to the supermarket to get yogurt. It feels like it's a bit more expensive than I used to pay.
Yeah, for a moment there, when you said me going, I thought you meant me goring. That's what came to mind.
Okay, no, me going to the supermarket.
Me goring, still same price. So that's the good news, yeah.
So let's start with cost of living, shall we? Okay, let's get that out of the way. Okay, since 2021, there have been several rounds of CDC vouchers.
Yeah.
So, you know, we know that it helps. For sure it does. I mean, I like using my CDC voucher, right, Steve?
Yeah, I'm sure you do. Sure.
Okay, so the general sense is we understand the big picture about why things are getting expensive. Oh, we know intellectually supply chain problems globally, but we can't help feeling that it's a bit overwhelming and it doesn't go away, right? So, Serene, maybe we can start with you. Any household items that you've seen, like over the past year alone, that you find, this is getting a bit too expensive?
Well, that's everything, right? But if I have to pick one, I would think that eggs are getting more expensive. And there is also a lot of option when it comes to eggs. And I have an attachment to eggs because my son can taste the brand of eggs. He's actually on the spectrum, which is why he has very
specific taste.
Correct. Heightened senses. Yeah. Heightened
senses. That's very interesting.
Yeah, Grab is definitely a lot more expensive because I live in Woodlands, right? And to get to my office in Ubi, used to be sub $20. Now I'm happy if at peak hours it's at 30 because it can go up to 40.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Then if you're like traveling back from town at night, can go up to 60 if it's raining. But yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Actually, for short distance, I think from even like less than 2 kilometers away, it can cost up to $8 these days. Okay. So it is expensive, especially when we have to care not just for the young, but also for the seniors at home. You know, basically, if everything is going up, if every cost is going up, we have to be more concerned about our future.
So that means you have to change your consumption as well. Okay. So Walter, I'm sure you've heard this ad nauseum.
Yeah. And it's not new, it's not unique to Singapore, because actually one would argue that inflation happens and cost of living overall is going up, right?
Cost of living, inflation pressure is actually going down this year, right? So it was much lower in the last year than it was over the past couple of years. But I think the reason why everybody is obviously very aggrieved is that when you look at how wages have actually evolved, right? Wages haven't kept up that much. So, you know, over the last 5 years or so, I think we saw less than 1% annual real wage growth. And that is very, very low compared to Singaporeans' experience in, let's say, the 2010s, when you had, you know, much higher annual real wage growth. So it's no surprise, I think, that the average Singaporean is feeling like their standard of living isn't getting better because it really hasn't that much in the last couple of years compared to 2010s. So that's one point. The other thing, I think, is when we say inflation is a certain number, right, that is actually a composite number. It's calculated from a basket of many different kinds of goods and services. And what's going on here is the kind of things that we see on a day-to-day basis and we pay for, that has probably gone up more than the average thing that goes into the basket. So I'll give you an example, right? What has actually gone down in the last few years has been the stuff that we buy that is imported and for which now we have got this great e-commerce, you know, supply chain. Right. We can buy stuff directly direct from the manufacturer in China or whatever. And the prices of those things have gone down. But for us on a day-to-day basis, the food prices have actually gone up. And the retail food especially has gone up. And so we see that day-to-day. So, you know, when we see that, we say, oh, what are we talking about? Inflation is coming down. That's not true because, you know, retail food has gone up. But actually, overall, other things have gone down, but we don't notice it so much.
Right, right. Do you think, you know, we are likely to have more CDC vouchers? I mean, most people would think, yeah, the best way to deal with people's feelings of that if something is too expensive is to just give them cash or, I don't know, vouchers.
Does that work for you guys?
I want to say that a CDC voucher is like having a chocolate on a bad day.
Okay.
So, you know, you kind of feel good for the moment.
Yeah.
But does it actually help you in the long run? Mm. So that is something to consider. I mean, it's good that the government is doing this for us, you know, trying to support all of us in their ways. But I think from a sustainability standpoint, it doesn't solve the crux of the issue.
Yeah. I mean, Walter, is it possible for government to come in and to help fix some of this? Yeah. I mean, ideally, we can have salaries all increase, but we know it's not realistic to just say increase salaries.
Or more CDC vouchers.
So when you look at the policy options, right, government has and how other governments have been trying to tackle this issue, you see some places they actually try to implement things like subsidy systems and so on. But that is not something we usually do because a subsidy kind of system tends to be very inefficient. You end up spending a lot of money on it and a lot of the help from that actually goes to people who may not need it so much, like richer people. I mean, this is especially if you subsidize things like petrol, which generally, you know, richer Singaporeans use because of cars and so on.
But what if you subsidize things like, I don't know, household items like rice, oil?
Yeah.
Those kinds of things.
Yeah, so that's where I think the CDC vouchers actually come in. Because then the idea is instead of giving a percentage subsidy or keeping the price at a certain amount, you give people some cash back and you let them decide what they want to do with it. And generally, that's better for consumers because different people have different kinds of things they want to spend on. I think the general idea is we all know that just using government money to give it back to people is not super sustainable. There really has to be a higher real wage growth. And ironically, I think some of the effort to do that is actually feeding back a bit into prices because what we've done in the last couple of years especially is try to bring up wages of lower wage workers in Singapore. So naturally, that flows through a bit. But I think if you move them up a bit and then you help higher income Singaporeans raise wages through, you know, more skills, training, productivity and so on, then that will help to take care of it in the longer run.
Okay.
So in a way, if we agree to raise the prices of our coffee to $2, for instance, but ensuring the extra 50 cents actually goes to the workers who are making it, supplying it, and things like that. Paus, as a business owner, I mean, do you feel this is feasible? I mean, raising salaries, is that the way to go?
We're one of the companies that got out of COVID better because we do digital work, right? So what happened during COVID was a lot of physical budgets, but physical marketing budgets got funneled into digital. So we experienced growth, right? One of the few companies that did. But right after that, you know, in 21, 22, you start to see that inflation costs really come up, right? So what we've been doing the last few years is that we've been raising our salaries 10% across the board like clockwork every year.
That's because you're making money from your...
We are making money, but in a sense, it's not just... But in order to, let's say, maintain this particular workforce, right, and to keep raising their salaries, I either have to increase their productivity or I have to increase the profitability. So it's not just revenue. I have to increase the actual profit from it, right? So I also feel hard-pressed to keep up, right? 10% a year, 10% a year. I can't go up to my clients and say, hey, can you give me 10% more budget this year or give me 10% more profit this year? It doesn't really work like that,
right?
So inevitably, we come to this point where how much of this is really sustainable? But if I don't do my part, then what am I doing? Because we are employers, right? We're the ones that actually put food on the table for our workers, right? So if we don't do anything about it, nobody's going to be able to.
But that's tough though. I feel like most employers, the last thing they want to do is increase, you know, salaries because it directly increases cost, right? In a way. You're right. I mean, productivity can go up. Maybe you digitalize something and they could do more with the time that they have, etc. But it's a bit more complicated, right?
It's actually what's facing Singapore SMEs is really complicated because you have this thing where Singapore SMEs traditionally, as they compare ourselves to regional SMEs, Malaysia, Vietnam, Philippines, we are a little costlier, but we defend that because we have a skilled workforce owing to a good education system. But then you have things like AI coming up. And then AI lets the good compete with the best. So what we are seeing now is that regional SMEs are able to produce similar level outputs but charge a fraction of the price.
Right.
So we are still ahead because it's not quite mature yet, but we're looking at this rapid attrition. right, that in a few years, right, they're going to be able to catch up to us fully, right? We lose that advantage. And not putting pay raises aside, how if we're going to sustain ourselves, that's the big question right here, right?
To be able to get the business, like, essentially.
Correct.
And that's not the bottom line, right?
So it's not just copywriters and graphic designers that are affected. You're talking about like legal expertise, you're talking about like financial modeling, you're talking about like coding, software development, stuff like that. They're going to be able to keep up with us. So this is inevitably what we're looking at Horizon.
Yeah. Would you say it is more expensive to run a business in Singapore than with our neighbours in the region?
Yes, but it's not a yes without option. So what I've been doing is that I actually expanded to a second office in JB, and I've like kind of like rescoped my Singaporeans to become team leaders with a JB team underneath them. So that way I can bring the average staff cost lower, but I can still leave some margin to, you know, increase everyone's salaries over time. Yeah, so that's what I'm doing.
For business, right, one of the biggest sticking points is this whole thing about digitalization, right? And there's lots of existing grants and subsidies, quite a lot, in fact.
Yes.
Right? Do you guys use that? Has that been successful for you? Like, can you tap into it, or you think the government needs to do more in that?
So we have benefited. I share an anecdote from my own hiring, right? So hiring grant is a huge one, right? I have this, one of my key staff today. I first brought her in, I think, like, around 2021. Mm. So I took her in with SG United, and then she moved on to CCP, and now she's taking the overseas market immersion program. So it's like three grants in a row, and then she's moving to management.
So all three are grants given by the government?
All three are grants, salary grants, right?
How much are we talking about?
So the first one was really very tricky because she was a graduate. She came to me around 28, so not her first job. She was working in a bank before that. Okay. So to come to me, she had to take a pay cut. So on paper, I offered her like 2.8, which is pay cut from what you expect a bank would give, right? Sure. But she was willing to take it up. And then my grant came out and said, we only can support you 1.9. I'm like, huh? How am I going to hire a graduate at one? Yeah, one. Mm-hmm. And I can't top it up because it's not legal, right? So putting that aside, it's not even about the money. It's the indignity of a graduate taking that kind of salary, having some work experience already. Mm-hmm. But she took it. Right? I sat down with her and said, look, I can't pay you more. I'm not allowed to pay you more. Right, but what I can do is the mismatch between whatever you're receiving now and what I promised you. Right, I put it all into training. Select any course you want. This lump sum, I'll throw it. If I mean to spend it on you, I mean to spend it on you, lah. So that's what I did. She accepted it. She went on course. We trained her, and then after that, she converted, lah. So we took a career conversion program, second grant. Then she became a full timer, and then after that, she got promoted again. Now she's at the cusp of, because I'm doing the JB thing, right, the Malaysia thing. Now she's doing a job transformation for an international role in management.
So the grants were there, they supported you, but they didn't really match the needs that were
not possible to match completely.
1.9k is a ticket or leave it, and it was really tough for us.
But these grants, these subsidies, are not meant to fulfill that requirement. They're just meant to be supportive in nature, right? To help along the way.
Yes, they're meant to support, but the grant condition was that I cannot give any more than what they offered. Yeah, so if they say 1.9, I have to give 1.9. I can't give on the side by myself.
What this anecdote points to is that grants actually can be helpful, I think, to help our SMEs and businesses, basically help our workers to reskill, find new opportunities, you know, move people up the wage ladder, right? So that's important. But I think second thing is that we also see that it's not easy to design a grant scheme to actually get everything done that you want it to, right? While also, curbing things like waste or inefficiency or even outright fraud. Some time ago, there was this productivity and innovation credit, I believe. And that was a grant scheme which, you know, while it may have achieved some objective, it was also widely recognized that there were a number of businesses and, in fact, consultants coming out of the woodwork to help businesses claim that money in less than, straightforward ways. So it was very problematic. And so I think there's this trade-off you have with grant schemes, which is that the more flexible you make them, sure, that means the more edge cases, the more users that businesses will find for them, and perhaps the more people you will help. But then if you make it too flexible, you do unfortunately encourage the wrong kinds of actors to come out and then start grabbing the money, for wrong purposes. So that's a trade-off we have to face.
Okay, Serene, let's talk about your perspective now, because you have children. You mentioned one is on the spectrum. You're also taking care of your grandmother. I mean, what are your needs?
I have a son who's on the spectrum and he actually requires, or rather to care for him, it takes a toll on my husband and my financial.
Ah. Okay.
Then, and, you know, having to bring him through early interventions, you know, supplementing with some of the private therapies as well.
Right.
And all the follow-ups with doctors. doctor. So that actually is very taxing. If I have to care for my son financially as well as my grandma, sure. I will be very busy working round the clock. And in fact, today, because I'm already working very hard to ensure that I can sustain that.
But do you feel that there's enough support, especially for your child who's on the spectrum?
The government is supportive. Yeah. And I think that it has been publicly shared, you know, as in them wanting to do more in this space.
But is it enough right now?
There is more that can be done.
Ah, okay.
So specifically, I think that there is a lack of infrastructure. So when we were on the journey to find an EPIC center for my son, there was a wait list of as long as a year to two.
Yeah.
Wow, okay.
And when we delay on the early intervention for them, we are delaying, you know, the ability to help them integrate into the society well. And in my case, thankfully, you know, my husband and I, we are both working it out. So we were able to find a subsidized private EPIC center to enroll him. And therefore, he can get the help earlier.
Do you feel there needs to be more support for families like you who are going through this journey?
Yes, and I think right now the support is actually given to those who are deemed more vulnerable. Okay, so I think I am in the middle or average class. Right. So therefore, the support that is offered to my family is more limited.
Okay. Yes, of course.
So in terms of the grant and things
like that. As far as the government is concerned, they would naturally give the most to the low income, right?
Correct.
Because they would need it the most. So yeah, I've heard this before where people say, oh, but I don't qualify for certain things. I don't get as much cash. I don't get as much, you know, subsidies, etc. Now, Walter, I wanted to ask you this, right? See, the thing about infrastructure, development and costs, right? Infrastructure takes time. Mm-hmm. So to increase PET schools, for example, to pay more teachers, to get more teachers, etc., all of this is like a years-long process, right? So, but the government has to, you know, put money in there and eventually may not help her specifically, but certainly will help a lot of the younger people. When people think about how budgets are done, that's how we look at it.
Yeah, so I would say that this is actually the part of government budgets and planning that people don't notice. We tend to pay attention only to the big splashy announcements or things like, oh, this year we're going to get so many dollars in CDC vouchers and so on, right?
Yes.
But then the planning to do stuff like build your new hospitals and recruit your staff and so on, it has to go on for years and years, right? There's all this planning for more healthcare manpower and facilities for the aging population. That's something that's definitely been going on in the background, which is necessary. Then there is a question about, you know, are you catching up fast enough to some other needs that have been identified or emerging, such as special needs education for children or more inclusive education systems and so on. So that's certainly an area which also would have to be looked at. Sometimes it's a problem of, you know, I don't announce in budget, therefore people assume not being done. Mm-hmm. But actually it has to be done and is being done over a longer term time.
I mean, when you look at it, the budget is actually a huge, monumental task. You've got X amount of money. You're like,
hundreds
where
of pages
shall I spend
long.
It to help keep this country running? There are needs here. I have medical needs. I have aging needs. I want to increase the population, you know, in birth. So it's kind of like trying to figure out where to put the money.
The priorities are quite clear. Family is a big thing that this government worries about. So, you know, the way we look at it is that no amount of money is going to make you want to have a kid, right? But when you do have children, it shouldn't be such a struggle. You know, it should be easier. Are you going to have more kids, Serene?
No.
How do you have children?
I'm planning for my second, actually. First is 15 months, so we're planning for a second. So, of course, we are keeping both eyes open to see what they're going to do for parents.
You'll be happy?
I think we're kind of decided already. Okay. Like, if the few thousand dollars was a decision point, I think we are not ready to have children, to be honest. Right.
Fair enough.
Okay. Yeah. But cheaper COE for families, maybe that will help. But Walter and I we've talked about this before.
So first off, I'm going to say this is all very academic, because I don't have a kid. But I will say that I think there are some things government can do directly, and that is, for example, increasing leave allowances, providing government support for leave. Right. So we had expansions to government paid paternity leave recently. Of course, you need fathers to take that up, actually, but assuming something they do that will actually help the families a bit, you know, with taking care of the kids in the first couple of years. You also have, of course, all your baby bonuses and other grants and so on given to families. But I think beyond that, the one thing that a lot of families really face in Singapore is this issue that they believe they need to sink a huge amount of investment into their kids in order for their kids to be, you might say, competitive. But I want to say, you know, I think one thing you can do about that is not to, you know, subsidize or regulate tuition. It is actually to look at your education system and to try to remove some of these, you know, like high stress pathway pain points, right? So that actually children have more opportunities and even into adulthood, right, to actually find the path that suits them the best. And I think we have tried to do that in recent years by reducing the intensity of, you know, those examinations, critical examinations, by providing more pathways in school, but also even when you get to, you know, the tertiary level, to ensure that even if you are on a so-called non-academic path at first, you actually, you have opportunities to upskill or to go to the academic path in the future if that's what you want. So I think this will help a bit, because it used to be the case, you know, like decades ago, that, oh, if you don't make it to a certain path, well, you know, like that's it. How do you actually change anything from then on? But I think it's not the case anymore, and we have to do more of that so that people feel less, you know, stressed about tuition and so on.
Yeah, but it takes a lot of convincing, I think.
And courage.
It's not just what the government does, honestly. It's also our attitudes, right? If we think maths tuition is important, it's important.
Yeah, it is a chicken and egg situation.
Yeah, which is why I said no, because I think I've done my national service. I have two.
Replace yourself.
me too.
Isn't the average like 0.9 something now? So I've already.
I've exceeded.
Yeah, I've exceeded. That's what we've won. I exceeded already.
Yeah. Then don't stop.
Okay, good job.
More, you know?
Good job.
But it is our whole attitude towards it. And I think what Walter is saying, if we change the way we look at it, it will make for a better environment, you know, overall. Because the same thing, like when we hire people at work now, you don't just look at the grades. You really is about the character during the interview, the personality, what comes forward. Those are the key elements, right?
Last question, maybe. What do you guys think? Are you expecting goodies since this is a very special year? We go around the table. What's your wish list goodie?
It has to be something. It's 60 and we got elections.
Can you start from the other way?
Walter, give us the modern answer.
Okay, structurally, right? I think Singaporeans, we expect more goodies in an election year budget, but there's a reason for that. It's because our government operates a balanced budget over the entire term. And then typically what that means is in the first couple of years after you just get elected, you are more conservative, you know, in your budgeting because you want to make sure you don't run a deficit, right?
Yep.
And then when you come to the last year, you might realize, oh, I've got a bit of room here. And so rather than let it, you know, send it to long-term reserve, you can spend that extra room. And that may well happen this year, of course. So more, I think, support for Singaporeans, especially given that the cost of living is still in everybody's mind and the wages haven't caught up yet. I think it'll be very appreciated. But also, I think investing more in I think human capital and people, so that's very important. We saw a lot of that earlier actually about how we're going to introduce re-employment support and so on, more skills future, but I think even more of that, probably that's what many workers want, because now, you know, we don't have a problem so much with unemployment, but we have a problem with quality employment. A lot of people feel their jobs are insecure, that they're not in the jobs that use their skills the best, so we want to do more to ensure that people have those opportunities.
For me, I think it's more of not how much more, but how the grants are dispersed. So unlike, you know, families or, you know, unlike employees, the grants are not automatic qualifications. For SMEs, we have to apply for them, we have to go through a painstaking process of approval, vetting, resubmission, and sometimes this can take really long. So what I personally face is, like, for example, if I want to do digitalization, right, it involves hiring, training, and tech deployment, right? And these three different kinds of support must come in sync. I cannot hire somebody, let them sit down on my payroll and then not have the deployment grant approved. Right, so that's the problem I have. Right, so it'll be nice if we can get all of this in sync, but most of the time it doesn't. So it's really about how, if we can get like a streamlined process of approval. Like, I agree with Walter what you said earlier about, you know, bad actors and all that, right? So to me, I felt like what was successful with the government's recent grants was the CCP, the Career Conversion Program. They dispersed this through the trade associations. Right, and it's really effective because one, trade associations, they know the constituent members really well, so they know the business problems, they know where they're good actors, bad actors. But also, they also know that, you know, if someone's trying to play punk, do something funny, they will be able to weed that out, right? So I thought, if the rest of the government grants actually can synchronize, streamline, it would really be good. for us.
Yeah, what you need is like the, you know, the one service app that we have whenever like you need to cut a tree branch or whatever, you just take a photo. Yeah,
correct.
You need that,
then you don't have the synchronized. You don't have the consultants coming out, you know.
I don't have very tangible ask in terms of this budget, but I think more awareness and more support can go into people on the spectrum.
Yes,
and more support can go into helping the seniors age with dignity. Because as we enter the super ageist society and thinking for my grandma, you know, that's really something that she would like. Yeah, if there can be more support for them, I think that would be great.
Wow. Thank you.
Okay. So come 18th February, we'll find out. I mean, I got to admit though, I think the government has done quite a bit, especially for our like pioneer generation and you know, over the years. So, but with the cost of living, it's going to be a challenge and everyone has different needs.
Thank you guys for coming.
Thank you for having us.
All right, guys. So do catch CNA's live coverage of the budget on 18th February. And of course, join us here on Deep Dive for an analysis off that budget right after that. And a shout out to the team as well, Tiffany Ang, Junaini Johari, Saya Win, Erin Lo, Joanne Chan, and Hanida Amin. See you soon. Bye.
Bye for now.